The World's Great Novel. Universally acclaimed as one of the superb tales of the sea is the story of a great white whale and of Captain Ahab's fatal monomania in pursuing it. The NBC University of the Air presents the second installment of a four-part radio edition of Herman Melville's adventurous classic, Moby Dick, another in the series of books that live, the world's great novels. In the first episode, we saw how Ishmael and his newly found shipmate, the cannibal Queequeg, signed aboard the whaling ship, the Pequod. And in spite of ominous warnings from a stranger named Elijah, they sailed with her. But not until they'd been at sea for several days did they learn the true purpose of the voyage, to hunt to his death the giant white whale, Moby Dick. And to that sinister errand, they found themselves irrevocably committed by Captain Ahab.
This is Ishmael again, mateys. As this business of whaling has somehow come to be regarded among landsmen as a disreputable pursuit, I'm all anxiety to convince ye of the injustice done us hunters of whales. For to grope down into the bottom of the sea after whales, especially after such a one as Moby Dick, to have one's hands among the unspeakable foundations, ribs, and very pelvis of the world, this is a fearful thing. But perhaps it was the whiteness of Moby Dick that, above all things, appalled me. I wondered, what must be the thoughts fermenting in the brain of Captain Ahab?
With a frigate's anchors for my bridle bits and harpoons for spurs, would I could mount that whale and leap the topmost skies to see whether the fabled heavens with all their countless tents really lie in camp beyond my mortal sight. Well, I am Ahab. What I've dared, I've willed, and what I've willed, I'll do. Starbuck thinks me mad, but I am demoniac. I am madness maddened. And though the white whale Moby Dick should turn up his wrinkled brow off the Persian Gulf or in the Bengal Bay or the Yellow Sea, or in any other waters haunted by his race, I'll rush unerringly to him and not's an obstacle. Death to Moby Dick!
Ahab's quenchless feud seemed mine. With greedy ears, I learned from my shipmates the history of that murderous monster against whom I and all the others had taken oaths of violence and revenge.
And I say that I, Starbuck, am here in this ocean to kill whales for my living and not to be killed by them for theirs. That hundreds of men have been so killed, I well know. What doom was my own father's? And where in these bottomless deeps can I find the torn limbs of my brother? And mark ye, shipmates, of all whales, Moby Dick is the most dangerous.
A white whale. Ye mark that, mates. Look ye, there's something special in the wind. Ahab has that's bloody on his mind. You hear that noise, Cabaco?
What noise do you mean?
There it is again, under the hatches. Don't you hear it? A cough. It sounded like a cough.
Cough me, I. Pass along the bucket.
There again. There it is. Sounds like two or three sleepers turning over.
Caramba, have done, shipmate, will you? It is the three soaked biscuits you eat for supper turning over inside you, nothing else. Look to the bucket.
Say what you will, Tobacco. I have sharp ears.
Aye. You are the chap that heard the hum of your old lady's knitting needles 50 miles at sea from Nantucket. You're the chap.
Grin away. We'll see what turns up. But I'm saying there's somebody down in the afterhole that hasn't yet been seen topside. And I bet your old mogul Ahab knows something of it, too. What do you think, Chips?
That's against my principles. Think not is my 11th commandment, and sleep when you can is my 12th. But if it's of Moby Dick you're getting nervous, I have seen him. Look at his hanging lower lip. What a huge sulk and pout is there. A sulk and pout, by carpenter's measurement, about 20 feet long and 5 feet deep. A sulk and pout that will yield you some 500 gallons of oil and more. Am I right, Mrs. Starbuck?
You are right, Chips. But I say, look at his forehead. The sharpest lance dotted by the strongest human arm only rebounds from it. It's as if the forehead of Moby Dick is paved with horses' hoofs. He'll be the death of us. The wild, watery loneliness of our lives did strongly incline the men to superstition regarding Moby Dick. As for myself, as the days passed and the Ivy Tusk Pickwood sharply bowed to the blast and gored the dark waves in her madness till like showers of silver chips the foam flakes flew over her bulwarks, for me the great floodgates of the wonder world seemed to swing open, and there floated into my inmost soul a giant whale, a grand hooded phantom like a snow hill in the air, Moby Dick.
Come in.
What do you want, Starbuck?
Will there be any change in the course, sir?
What's the wind?
Nor'east by east, sir.
As you perceive, I have been consulting my sea charts. Where do you think Moby Dick spouts today, Mr. Starbuck?
No one could possibly know that, sir.
I'm not so sure of that, Starbuck.
Time and tide flow wide, Captain. And the hated whale has the whole round watery world to swim in.
Aye. Where the unrecorded names and navies rust, and untold hopes and anchors rot. Where in her murderous hole this frigate earth is ballasted with bones of millions of the drowned. There in that awful waterland is Moby Dick's familiar home. Nevertheless, we shall find him.
How, sir?
Some months, Starbuck, I have been making an elaborate migratory chart of the sperm whale. Here, look. Here are the four oceans of the world with all their currents and eddies.
Yes, sir.
And here I have penciled in the various tides and currents, thereby calculating the driftings of the sperm whale's food. Dost thou understand?
I think I do, sir.
Good. Now, by referring to the regular seasons for hunting the sperm whale in particular latitudes, we can arrive at a surmise approaching to certainty concerning the likeliest day and upon what feeding ground to search for our prey.
But Moby Dick, sir, may not necessarily return to the same grounds twice.
Aye. But I have reduced possibilities to probabilities by consulting the old log books of 100 whaling ships. Look. Yeah. These areas, shaded in red, are his places of long abode, Mr. Starbuck. I know his habits, as I know my own. So it is not so absurd and hopeless a task, after all, to seek out one solitary creature in the unhooped oceans of this planet. Aye, Starbuck. Though this leviathan comes floundering down upon us from the headwaters of the eternities, and rearing upon the topmost crest of the equatorial flood, spouts his froth defiance to the skies, mine is the harpoon that will make him spout thick blood.
Perhaps, sir.
Not perhaps, but absolutely. Change the course at 4 barrels in the second dog watch. Make it sou'west for south. Leave me to my calculations. They at least give me pleasure.
Yes, sir.
Tell the lookouts and the mastheads to skin their eyes for the white whale over white water. And if they see but a bubble, sing out.
Aye, aye, sir.
Some certain significance lurks in all things, else all things are little worth. and the round world itself but an empty cipher, except to sell by the cartload to fill a morass in the Milky Way. The golden coin offered by Ahab to the first to sight Moby Dick was of purest virgin gold, raked somewhere out of the heart of gorgeous hills, and though now nailed to the mainmast, yet untouchable and immaculate to any foulness, it still preserved its keto glow. Days, weeks passed, and under full sail the ivory Pequod swept down into the Pacific, that rolling of the midmost waters of the world, the tide-beating heart of the earth. And then one transparent blue morning, when the long burnished sun blade on the waters seemed a golden finger laid across them and joining some secrecy, high aloft in the cross trees, Kabako cried out, "Lord,
that's it.
Where away?"
All is in commotion.
"Sabbath! Back the mainyard! Swing the boats out!"
The cranes are thrust out, the mainyard backed. But look, five phantoms, for so they seem, are casting loose the tackles of the captain's boat on the other side of the deck.
Look, Mr. Starbuck, where'd they come from? From below hatches, the ones I kept hearing. They're Chinamen.
Yes, stowaways and Ahab's boatmen.
The figure standing by the boat's prow is tall, with one white tooth evilly protruding from its steel-like lips. Ahab cries out to him.
"All ready there, Padella?"
"Yes, Captain."
"Lower away then, you hear? You, Starbuck, step for you others. Lower away there, I say."
With a swift rattle of blocks, the boats are striking the water. Hardly do they pull out from under the ship's lee when Ahab's boat pulls round under the stern, rowed by its sinister-looking crew.
"Rest yourselves! Give way all four boats! Now, Starbuck, pull out more to leeward. It isn't Moby Dick, but get him anyway."
"Aye, aye, sir. Lay back on the oars, men." "There. There again. There she blows ahead, boys. Lay back."
They're off. Starbuck in the lead.
"Pull. Pull, my fine hearts alive. Pull. Why don't you break your backbones, my boys? What is it you stare at, those chaps in yonder boat? There are only five more hands come to help us someday against Moby Dick himself. So pull and never mind the smell of brimstone. Easy, easy. Don't be in a hurry. Why don't you snap your oars, you rascals? Bite something, you dogs. That's it. That's it. Long and strong. Stop snoring and pull. Pull, will you? Pull and start your eyes out. Spring, my men, spring. Sing out and say something, my heart. That's it. Roar and pull, my thunderbolts. Reach me on that whale's back, boys. Steadily, lads. We're getting closer. Only pull back all your backbones. Burst your livers and lungs. Give them the long and strong stroke. Raise the buried dead perpendicular out of their graves. Pull! Who's dropped an anchor overboard? Will you spit fire or not? Pull!
Furthest to windward, Ahab's tiger-yellow crew seems of steel and whalebone. Like five trip hammers, they rise and fall with regular strokes of strength. What happened? Ahab at the steering oar suddenly fell to one knee, and his rower stopped. They're out of it, but not Starbuck. He continues to chase the whale, running dead to leeward.
Every man look out along his oars. Now, Queequeg, stand up.
With a bound, Queequeg springs to the bow, harpoon quivering in his hand.
There he is. He's pulled him. Cucumbers is the word. He is slipping up on him, but keep pulling, nothing more. Softly, it ain't the white whale today. All right, Queequeg. Give it to him.
He's hit it.
Turn all. Wet the line. Wet the line. He's rushing.
Every man clings to his seat as they shoot forward, pulled by the whale.
Hooray! This is the way to sail. Every keel a Sunday. Haul in. Haul in.
All hands are pulling the boat up to him while yet they are being towed on. Now they're closer. Queequeg shoots dart after dart into the flying monster.
Pull up. Pull up!
Red tides of blood pour from all sides of the monster. His tormented body rolls, not in brine, but in blood, which bubbles and seethes. Now he spouts. Again. Again.
Jet after jet of white smoke agonizingly shoot from the whale's spout hole.
Once more, Queequeg.
The whale surges from side to side, dilating his spout hole with sharp, cracking, agonized breaths. Red gore shoots into the air and runs dripping down the whale's flanks. His heart has burst.
He's dead, Mr. Starbuck.
Yes. His pipe smoked out. Though in many of its aspects, this visible world seems formed in love, the invisible spheres were formed in fright. At sea there were times of dreamy quietude, when beholding the tranquil beauty and brilliancy of the ocean's skin, one forgets the tiger heart that pants beneath it. So too, in pursuing the whale, Captain Ahab's ivory leg had received a half-splintering shock. He ordered the ship's carpenter to fashion a new one. The next morning, Chips the carpenter went below to Ahab's cabin.
Come in, come in. Well, man-maker...
If the captain pleases, I will now mark the length. Let me measure, sir.
Measured for a leg. Good. Well, it's not the first time. Go ahead, Chips.
Aye, sir. For most folks, one pair of legs lasts a lifetime.
But not for me, eh? I'm a hard driver, is that it, Chips? Driven one leg to death and spamming the substitutes. Now, I suppose I'll be wearing out bone legs by the cord.
I hope not, sir.
What's Prometheus doing? The blacksmith, I mean. I have a job for him, too.
He's forging the buckle screw for the leg, sir.
Right. It's a partnership, and he supplies the muscle part. Between the two of you, I should order a complete man, built after a desirable pattern.
How is that, sir?
50 feet high in his socks. Chest modeled after the Thames Tunnel. Legs with roots to him to stay in one place. Arms 3 feet through the wrists, a brass forehead, and a quarter of an acre of fine brains. And no heart. No heart at all.
I'm afraid I don't understand you, sir.
What art thou sneezing about?
Bone is rather dusty, sir.
Take a hint, then, and when thou art dead, don't bury thyself under living people's noses.
Sir?
So now I am debtor to a blockhead for a bone to stand on. Cursed be that mortal inter-indebtedness which will not do away with ledgers. I would be free as air, and I'm down in the whole world's books. Finish that measuring?
Aye, aye, sir.
Come in, come in, come in. Come in, Mr. Starbuck. How long before this leg is done, Carpenter?
Oh, perhaps an hour, sir.
Well, bungle away at it and then bring it to me.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Tell the blacksmith to report to me and close that door after you. On deck, be gone.
Aye, aye, sir.
Well, what do you want this time, Starbuck?
We've been pumping the ship, and the oil in the hold is leaking, sir. We must up the oil casks and break them out.
Heave to here for a week to tinker a parcel of old hoops?
Either do that, sir, or waste in one day more whale oil than we may make good in a year. What we come 20,000 miles to get is worth saving, sir.
So it is. So it is.
If we get it.
I was speaking of the oil in the hold, sir.
And I was not speaking of the oil in the hold. Be gone.
Let it leak. Excuse me, sir.
I'm all a leak myself, Mr. Starbuck. Aye. Leaks in leaks. Not only full of leaky casks, but those leaky casks are in a leaky ship. Myself. And that's a far worse plight than the Pequod's man. Yet I don't stop to plug my leak. Or who can find it in the deep-loaded hull? Or how hope to plug it even if found in this life's howling? No, Mr. Starbuck. I will not have the cask. Hoisted.
What will the owners say, sir?
Let the owners stand on Nantucket Beach and out yell the typhoons. What care they have? Owners. Owners. Thou art always prating to me, Starbuck, about those miserly owners. as if the owners were my conscience. But look you, the only real owner of anything is its commander. And hark you, my conscience is in this ship's keel.
Captain Ahab, a better man than I might well pass over in thee what he would quickly enough resent in a younger man. Aye, and in a happier one, Captain Ahab.
Dost thou then so much as dare critically to think of me?
Shall we not understand each other better than hitherto, Captain Ahab?
There is one God that is Lord over the earth, and one captain that is Lord over the Pequot. On deck.
Very well, sir. Thou hast outraged, not insulted me, sir. But for that I ask thee not to fear me. Thou wouldst but laugh. But let Captain Ahab beware of Captain Ahab. Beware of thyself.
What's that? Ahab, beware of Ahab. There's something there. Wait. Very well, Starbuck. Furl the topgallant sails and close reef the topsails fore and aft. Back the main yard. Up with the casks and break out of the main hole.
Aye, aye, sir.
That'll be the blacksmith. Let him in.
Yes, sir.
Come in, Perth.
Thank you, Mr. Starbuck.
Well, come over here. Don't stand there trying to forge out a smile.
Aye, aye, sir. You sent for me, sir.
In no paradise myself, I am impatient of all misery in others that is not mad. Tell me, an old pike head with seams and dents in it, canst thou make it all smooth again, blacksmith?
I think so, sir.
And I suppose thou canst smooth almost any seams and dents, never mind how hard the material is, eh?
All seams and dents, but one?
Aye. Look ye here, then. Can you smooth out a seam like this across and down my skull? Because if so, glad enough would I lay my head upon thy anvil and feel thy heaviest hammer between my eyes. Answer. Canst thou smooth this seam?
That is the one, sir. Said I not all seams and dents, but one?
Aye, blacksmith. It is the one unsmoothable. Hark ye. I want a harpoon made. One that a thousand yoke of thieves could not part. Something that will stick in a whale like his own fin bone. There you are. The gathered nail stubs of the steel shoes of racing horses to make it out of.
Horseshoe stubs, sir. Thou hast here the best and stubbornest stuff we blacksmiths ever worked.
Hey, I know it, old man. Those stubs will weld together like glue from the melted bones of murderers.
This is to be the harpoon for the white whale, sir?
For the white fiend. Now for the barbs. My razors. The best of steel. Here. Make the barbs sharp as the needle's sleet of the icy sea.
Aye, sir.
And mind you, no water for tempering. I want my harpoon to be of the true death temper. So, we'll draw blood from the arm of Fadala, my own harpooner. Aye, tempered in the blood of that Chinese devil himself.
The leg was measured, and the harpoon was made and tempered, and the whole world boomed before the wind as we swept across the robust and manlike sea that heaved with long, strong, lingering swells as Samson's chest in his sleep. And then one night, Ahab started from his slumbers and sought out Fadala, the phantom harpooner, who lay with unblinking eyes in the forecastle head.
Della.
Yeah, Captain.
I've dreamed it again.
Of the hearses?
Yes, of the hearses.
Have I not prophesied, Captain, that neither hearse nor coffin can be thine?
Aye. But who is put in a hearse that dies on the sea?
I prophesied that ere thou couldst die on this voyage, two hasses must be seen by thee on the sea. The first not made by mortal hands, and the visible wood of the last one must be grown in America.
Strange sight that, a hearse floating over the ocean with the waves for pallbearers. Such a sight we shall not soon see.
Thou canst not die till it be seen, Captain.
And what was that saying about thyself?
Though it come to the last, I shall still go before thee, thy pilot.
And when thou art so gone before, if that ever befalls, then ere I can follow, thou must still appear to me, to pilot me still? Was it not so?
Yes, Captain.
Well then. Well then, my pilot, that makes two pledges that I shall yet slay Moby Dick and survive it.
Hemp only can kill thee.
The gallows, you mean? I am immortal then, on land and on sea. Immortal on land and on sea.
One more word about whaling, mateys, before I leave you tonight. Be economical with your lamps and candles. Not a gallon of whale oil ye burn, but at least one drop of man's blood was spilled for it. As you shall come to see in our deadly pursuit of Moby Dick.
Moby Dick by Herman Melville is one of the world's great novels, brought to you each week by the NBC University of the Air. Next week, be sure to listen to the third episode from Moby Dick, and remember that this and countless other great books are to be had in your local public library. To enhance your enjoyment of these broadcasts, NBC offers you Herbert Gorman's Handbook of the World's Great Novels. Just send 25 cents with your request to World's Great Novels, Post Office Box 30, Station J, New York 27, New York. Moby Dick is adapted for radio by Frederick Schlick. The music was composed by Emil Soderstrom and the orchestra directed by Bernard Berquist. The entire production was under the direction of Homer Heck. Ishmael is played by Everett Clark, Captain Ahab by Jess Pugh, and Starbuck by Donald Gallagher. Others were Joe Anthony, Boris Aplon, Cliff Norton, Art Peterson, and Cliff Subir. And this is Dave Garraway. The program came to you from Chicago and has been a presentation of the National Broadcasting Company and its independent affiliated stations. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.